air for Fan for Racing Radio. This is Thursday, April the 4th, and we're doing our podcast here with co-host Andy Lasky. Welcome to the show, Andy.
Thank you, Sharon. Good to be on, and hello to everyone else listening today.
Yes, indeed. Super excited to be here. All right. I'm just going to do an overview real quick. We're going to start with some short track news and some of the upcoming races. And afterward, we'll also update the ARCA Menards, the ARCA East, and the ARCA West series. They are not racing this weekend, but we will make sure you know when their next races are. Afterward, we're going to comment on the Ford Performance Media interview that took place earlier this week with driver Cam Waters with Tickford Racing and Repco. He's part of the Repco Australian Supercar Series. And this weekend in the NASCAR Truck Series, he's going to be making his debut in the number 66 Thor Sport Racing Ford. He has won 10 races in the Supercar Series, and three of those races in each of the last three seasons. So he's been pretty productive in the Supercar Series in Australia, and now he's coming to the NASCAR Truck Series this weekend. Once we get through that interview, I'm only going to play about half of it. And afterwards, Andy and I will comment on the interview. And then after that, we're going to preview the NASCAR Truck Series, the Xfinity Series, and the Cup Series, all racing at Martinsville Speedway this weekend. Of course, we end our episode with our Hot Topic Sound-Off conversation with the Fan for Racing crew. They're all busy today, so it might be just you and I, Andy.
Yeah, no, which is... you know, obviously always look to have and like to have everyone on board. But for me, it's been about 2 or 3 weeks since my last show. So I'm certainly glad to be on today on this snowy, windy day where I'm at. But, yeah, good to be on.
Yeah.
And we'll have some fun.
Yes, I'm so glad that you're doing well with the snowstorm that's going through the Northeast there. I know we got some snow in Illinois as well. I'm down in Texas right now, but... yeah, the snow has been hitting a lot of different states. And so we hope everyone stays safe. We're going to start with the short tracks. There's a few things going on there. I guess I'll start with something that we missed last Monday, and that's that Ryan Newman actually won his first race with the Smart Modified Tour at Tri-County Motor Speedway. Matt Weaver writes about that over at Short Track Scene if you want to know more about it. But I thought that was definitely noteworthy, and I apologize for missing it earlier this week.
Yeah, always fun to see Ryan Newman still racing. He's turned to the modifieds in his post-NASCAR Cup Series career, and he seemingly is having a good time with that. So nice to see him pick up a win there. That's the Smart Modified Tour. And then some other news from the dirt track scene. A solid weekend for David Gravel has him in control of the World of Outlaws sprint car standings here early in 2024. That story is by Alec Knighton, and that's at worldofoutlaws.com.
Yes, indeed. David Gravel, a big name in the World of Outlaws, and really good to see him having a good, solid weekend there. There's a new edition, though, that has come out, and it's the documentary series for the Legends of Racing. It's coming out this month, focusing on Mel Kenyon and Rich Vogler in the USAC series. And you can read more about that over at USAC Media. But I always like to see documentary series that come out that focus on racing across the country. I think it's awesome.
It is awesome, and it's nice to see there's been a bit of a wave of that here recently. You saw it first with the Formula One, and now, of course, NASCAR having their own Netflix documentary, and it gives everyone a good, solid look at the behind the scenes of what it's like from the driver and team perspective. So it's good to see this content. I think that it helps draw people in and helps generate interest. So it's always exciting to see that side of things for sure. Some short track news. The entry list for the Whelen Modified Tour's upcoming event at the Thompson Speedway Motorsports Park has been revealed. That's at Flow Racing, courtesy of Rob Blunt.
And we're going to talk about that, too, because it's a very big race that's taking place out at Thompson Speedway, as he pointed out. But I want to mention that over on NASCAR Regional, they have a pit box that tells you all the details that you want to know about that race, including when it starts and everything else. If you're out in that area, which is Connecticut, you're going to want to get out there to the Icebreaker 150. It's going to take place at on April the 7th, I believe that's Sunday, out at Thompson Speedway's Motorsports Park. It's a 0.625-mile asphalt oval in Thompson, Connecticut. It starts at 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll run 150 laps, and you can get tickets at the track. So Sunday, April the 7th, they will have final practice from 12:30 to 1:30 p.m. Eastern, qualifying at 3:30 p.m. And then, as I mentioned earlier, the Icebreaker 150 actually starts at 4:30. And you can watch it over at Flow Racing if you can't make it out there to the track. So I think that's pretty cool.
It is really cool, and I've never been to a race personally at Thompson, but I have been to several Whelen Modified Tour races or Tour-type modified races in general at New Hampshire and Stafford, and they put on an incredible show no matter where they go. So certainly, if you can get out to the racetrack, by all means, do that. They are incredible races to go watch, but certainly Flow Racing is a great resource to watch that race. It should be a fun one, so I'm for sure looking forward to that. Another upcoming race that we can talk about actually is today, April 4th, on Thursday, for drag racing. It's the PDRA East Coast Nationals at the Gallatin Motorsports Park. That was earlier this morning, may still be ongoing. So if you head over to Flow Racing right now, you might be able to catch the end of that. But obviously, drag racing is always fun, and so hopefully you can go catch the end of that race.
Yeah. But I thought I would today because that is something that's going on right now that you can catch over at Flow Racing. Also, Dominion Raceway is a perfect place to honor Virginia racing legend Dickie Boswell. Again, over at NASCAR Regional, they've done a feature article there talking about Dominion Raceway and their race that they are honoring one of Virginia's legend racers, Dickie Boswell. So this one, again, you can get all of the details. I thought maybe they'd give us the start time of the race. I don't see it here. But I really encourage you to go over and check it out because Richard Boswell is the son of Dickie Boswell, and he's the crew chief for Chase Briscoe in the NASCAR Cup Series. And Briscoe is planning to be there Saturday, and he will be signing autographs. So that's really cool to see NASCAR turning out for this event as well in the form of Chase Briscoe.
Yeah, that was what I was going to point out, Sharon. For those who may not be familiar, Richard, of course, his father is Dickie Boswell, who was a great race car driver who they're honoring in this race. But of course, Richard actively involved in NASCAR, a former driver himself who has worked as a crew chief the last several years and has formed a very good relationship with Briscoe, and they currently compete in the Cup Series. But obviously cool that they'll be honoring Richard's father, again, a well-known short track racer in the Southeast. So pretty cool that they're doing that at Dominion Raceway, and it'll be a great chance for those who can get out to that track this coming weekend. Something that I wanted to reiterate, Sharon, that you've already mentioned, but since it's on our list here, the pit box or the Whelen Modified Tour is ready to break the ice at Thompson. I know you already mentioned that, but certainly for those who want to get more information on this Whelen Modified Tour race, just simply go to the pit box under the NASCAR Regional section on the NASCAR.com website, and you'll get plenty of information to get you set up for that race this weekend.
I don't have this on our list, but it's something that I usually mention to everybody at this point of our broadcast because Flow Racing and Racing America do such a great job of having broadcasts available for people who cannot get to the track. If you go over to Flow Racing, right at the very top, they have a schedule of the upcoming races that are taking place, and you can choose one of those races to either go to or to watch over at Flow Racing. And then they have a similar type thing set up over at Racing America as well, where you can catch all of the upcoming races that are taking place in the short track and dirt world and watch those races either at Racing America, if you're subscribed there, or get out there to the track and take a look at those races. It's always fun to be out at the track. One of the other things that's kind of cool, if you go over to Racing America, is they've got podcasts that are available over there as well. The newest episode of Mics Are Hot with guest Kenny Wallace is available over there. And so we do our part to get the news out to everybody about what's happening in the racing world. But they're doing a lot as well, and that's not the only podcast that they have over at Racing America. So I encourage you to check that out as well. Have you listened to any of those podcasts, Andy?
No, not on Racing America specifically, but I'm certainly a fan of racing podcasts in general, and that has been on the rise in the last several years, and I love it because it gives us, the fans, a really good insider's perspective from various people across the sport, whether it's NASCAR or other forms of racing. So I love the podcast. It's something I'll have to check out sometime because certainly it's great content and it's always worth a listen.
It definitely is. It gives you some insight with racing that's going on in the short track world within NASCAR and the ARCA Menards. So definitely worth the time to check those out. Okay, we're a little bit ahead of schedule here, but I'm going to go ahead and get started because we've got the post-media interview that took place earlier this week, the Ford Performance media interview, and that was with driver Cam Waters. He's with Tickford Racing and races in the Repco Australian Supercar Series. Well, he's come to America, and he's going to be racing in the NASCAR Truck Series this weekend at Martinsville Speedway in the number 66 Thor Sport Racing Ford at Martinsville. I think that's so exciting when we see other drivers from other countries and other disciplines that come into NASCAR and kind of get their toes wet. I know you enjoy having that happen as well, Andy.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be looking forward to hearing his interview here. Always exciting to see somebody new come in and run either ARCA or the Truck Series. And, certainly we're talking specifically about Cam Waters here. Is that correct?
Yeah,
what's exciting
talking
about this? And
go ahead.
What's exciting about this, is obviously you look at the success of other drivers who've come over from supercars. Years ago, there was Marcus Ambrose. Presently, we have Shane Van Gisbergen. And those are very talented, very good drivers. So I really look forward to not only hearing Cam's interview here in just a few moments, but also looking forward to seeing, how he does as he enters his first truck race. Martinsville is a tough track, certainly, to race at. I believe he's running there this weekend. Correct me if I'm wrong, but definitely excited to see what he'll be able to do.
Yes. Martinsville Speedway this weekend in the Truck Series. Again, he's driving that number 66 F-150 truck for Thor Sport Racing. He'll be a fifth entry for them this weekend. So let's go ahead and listen to the interview and then at least half of the interview, and then Andy and I will talk about it afterwards, okay? So we'll go ahead and get started.
I'm curious, I don't know if you're aware of it, but there's always seems to be like...
All right, everyone, appreciate you joining us here this morning on a Tuesday. Cam Waters, of Thor Sport Racing joining us here for our weekly call. Cam going to be making his NASCAR debut on the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series event this Friday night at Martinsville Speedway. If you've got a question for Cam, by all means, raise your hand in the Zoom platform. Or if you're having some issues, just send me a note in the chat, and I'm happy to ask your question for you. And, Cam, I guess I'll just start with just a general opener of just your thoughts and how you're feeling as we're just a few nights away here from your Martinsville debut.
Yeah, I'm absolutely pumped. Super excited to be, you know, finally having a race over here in a truck. And, you know, I've always followed NASCAR and done a lot of oval stuff myself on dirt in Australia. So to do a, you know, pavement oval is pretty cool for me and something I've always wanted to do.
I was going to say, how long has it been, or how long have you been trying to try to maybe make something like this happen?
I've wanted to do it for years, but you know, with what I do in Australia, yeah, that's always has been my focus. It still is my focus for sure. But we came to Martinsville, you know, 12 months ago and watched a race, and kind of that's probably sparked a bit more interest in me to pursue it. And yeah, it's been chipping away in the background over kind of the last 12 months to make something happen like this.
All right, I'm going to open it up for questions here, and I'll just start with Bob. I know you're driving, Bob. Are you in a position there? Do you have a question for Cam? Oh, Bob's rolling, so he may not be in a position. You're at the tech center, so can you kind of give me an idea of kind of what's been like as we lead into Martinsville? You've been on the sim, just kind of what has the preparation been like for this race?
Yeah, so we flew into Cleveland, then drove to Sandusky and did a seat sit and, you know, met the team and everyone on my truck, and that was amazing. It kind of blown away by how big Thor Sport was and, you know, their whole operation. And I was blown away with how cold it was in Sandusky as well, coming out in Australian summer. It was freezing there. And then, yeah, we did a road trip to Charlotte and been, yeah, here since Saturday or Sunday. So, yeah, been at the tech center, doing a bit of sim stuff today. So, yeah, ramping up, you know, the efforts for the weekend and, you know, trying to learn as much as I can in a short, you know, period of time.
All right, we're going to kick off questions here with Kelly Crandall. Kelly, go ahead and ask your questions for Cam.
Thank you, Dan. Cam, you said a minute ago about going to the Martinsville race last year. So was this something that you were hoping to put together even before seeing what Shane and Brody did when they came over last year to the Cup Series?
Yeah, 100%. So I've been wanting to do something like this for a long time. And, yeah, Shane was super lucky with how his stuff all come together. And, yeah, was he super happy for him, and how Chicago went for him was obviously amazing. So, yeah, for me, it's been something that I've wanted to do for a long time, and, yeah, it's just great to finally be able to put something together and do this race.
I'm also curious, why a truck versus maybe an Xfinity or a Cup car? Why go with Thor Sport, how that deal came together?
Yeah, so, well, I went to Martinsville 12 months ago, and I've done a lot of, I guess, dirt oval stuff, small stuff in Australia. So for me, I wanted to experience oval racing, and, you know, the truck was probably the perfect opportunity to come over here and do a short oval and, you know, get racing.
Thank you.
All right, let's go on to Jim Utter from motorsport.com. Jim, go ahead. Floor's yours.
Hey, Cam, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I was just curious, is this more a get your feet wet and see what it's like kind of venture, or do you sort of have an end game in your, as part of your career, in which you'd like to actually be a full-time participant in a NASCAR series?
Look, I definitely have a dream to one day get over here and race full-time NASCAR, but, you know, to get there, it's such a long journey. And, you know, I've got a pretty cool thing that's going on in Australia, racing the supercars. And for me to do the odd, you know, NASCAR race, you know, like what we're doing this weekend is pretty cool. So more than happy if I can just do this weekend, get through it, have a bit of fun and, you know, work out what NASCAR's all about and see what happens in the future.
As a quick follow-up, what is it that intrigues you as a competitor and a race car driver about the NASCAR style of racing?
Yeah, totally different to how we go racing in Australia. We have 12 weekends a year that we're racing. We're over here, you know, you're racing every weekend. It's pretty full on. You know, the style of racing totally different. I've grown up on a dirt oval background. Dad used to race. I've raced, you know, sprint cars, late models, modified. So oval stuff isn't new to me. So yeah, I wanted to come over and experience the pavement oval.
Thank you very much. And Kim, I want to follow up on Jim's question too, because we hear from guys who have come over from other disciplines and get into NASCAR about the aggressiveness. Is that something that you've heard, or just kind of how are you preparing, or have you talked to Shane or Brody or any of those guys as to how it's different from what you race there in Australia?
Yeah, I heard it's pretty aggressive over here. I've watched a fair few races, so I've kind of picked that up myself. But, yeah, I guess spoke to Shane about how he's obviously tackled racing and races. And then obviously the Thor Sport drivers as well as give me a few tips with how, you know, truck races go down. So they say it gets pretty wild at times, so they hold on. But the way I want to treat it is, you know, just finish, hit the truck clean, and learn as much as I can.
All right. Chris Knight has a question that I'm going to ask for him. He wants to know, what is the possibility of doing more races in 2024, and what would you consider Friday night a success?
I think Friday night, if we can finish, you know, keep the truck clean, like I said, and take in as much as I can, I think that'd be good. I've kind of got no expectations. I don't really know how I'm going to go. It's going to be kind of jumping in the deep end, so to speak, with the limited practice and not be able to drive the truck beforehand. Right now, this is the only thing we've kind of got set in stone. It's kind of hard with my schedule in Australia. Like, I'm going after a championship over there, so this race fitted in pretty perfectly, you know, between AGP and Telco to, you know, fit in a race. So really just need to get through this weekend and see how we go and, you know, go home, go to New Zealand and try and win some races over there to get, you know, my supercar championship back on track.
Okay, we'll go ahead and end it there. What are your thoughts, Andy?
Yeah, it was interesting to listen to him there. Certainly, I think he has a really good attitude going into this weekend. And I think the expectations are very realistic, certainly being his first career NASCAR start. I think to go in to a track like Martinsville, which, as we know, can be a tough short track and with limited stock car experience, you know, I think if he can go in there and you know, try to complete all the laps and bring the truck home in one piece, I think that would be a huge success for an initial start. So certainly looking forward to seeing what he can do. We all know that Thor Sport is a good team that brings fast trucks every week. So he's certainly, I think, in the right place. And, you know, keep an eye on him this weekend. Certainly worth, you know, looking forward to that. And, I, you know, hopefully he'll do well.
Yeah. Too, when he was talking about how aggressive the drivers are here versus in Australia, and that he was prepared for that after talking with other drivers and even the drivers of Thor Sport. So I thought that was kind of interesting too, that we were a little overly aggressive here. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I hate to say it, Sharon, but I couldn't agree more, especially when you look at the nature of the truck series in its recent history, if you will. So Martinsville is a tough place to make your debut, especially in the truck series, which has been known to be aggressive at times. So hopefully he's not too disappointed. But I'm hopeful that he can at least have an uneventful race. And, you know, get some valuable experience, and maybe that'll lead to other opportunities in the future.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be I've always wondered why people start their first race at a track like Martinsville, because it is such a short track, and I think that is probably one of the reasons why they'd rather practice on a short track. But there's so many trucks that are on the pavement that it makes it hard sometimes for these drivers to really race each other. without being aggressive. So it's going to be interesting to watch. Hopefully everybody will behave themselves and put on a good show out there at Martinsville this weekend, and we'll have some good things to see and watch out there. I know some of our Truck Series picks are in already. I think we're just missing Mike's at this point, but I know Jay Huseman took Corey Heim this weekend. Tommy took Lane Riggs. Owen took Enfinger. I'll let you say who your pick is, Andy.
Yeah, you know, and interestingly enough, I was targeting Lane Riggs as my number one pick, and it's a good choice that Tommy made because I know it's been a tough start to his rookie truck season, but he's a really good short track racer. He ran top five, I think, in a race or two last year driving, I think it was the 7 truck for Spire, and he did a really nice job. So his background is short track racing. So in the long and the short of it, I really look at a place like Martinsville as a place that he can get his season headed in the right direction with a strong run. So I think that's an excellent pick. I personally took the next best thing, which I think is another excellent pick. Ty Majewski is another short track ace from the upper Midwest. I look at a place like Martinsville where they can potentially get their first win of the season. So definitely, you know, think that yeah, everyone's pick so far has been pretty good. And one thing I wanted to touch upon regarding Martinsville, you know, it is a short track, so it's a good place to make your debut, but it's a very technical racetrack that really requires a lot of driver finesse, you know, being easy on the brakes and being easy on the equipment if you want to get to the end of that race and be in contention. So even though it is a short track and it is, you know, probably a good place to make your debut, it's not the easiest of short tracks and requires a lot from the driver. However, I think given you know, Cam's background in supercars, it may play into his driving style, and he may do better than we might think. But I'm excited to see what he can do for sure.
Absolutely, and that's a good wrap-up for his interview, is that he is certainly one of the drivers to watch this weekend. So you took Majewski. Brian took Christian Eckes. I took Ben Rhodes. We don't know yet who Mike Orzel's going to take or who Randy's going to take, but we definitely have some good picks there. One of the things I forgot to mention to you that we do at Vamper during the radio show preview part of the show is I will go through and just give you the box scores for the top-ranking drivers in each series. And so as we transition over to the Truck Series preview show, I am going to do that for you now. Corey Heim was a pretty good pick because he's got the highest driver rating of any of the other drivers. His driver rating is 148.4. He's got an average finish of 1.0, so that's obviously based on just one race. Keep in mind, the highest score you can get is 150. So he's pretty close to the best can be with that ranking after just one race. So that's something to keep in mind there. Kyle Busch is next. I don't think he's on the entry list this weekend, so keep that in mind. His driver rating is 125. And in two races, his average finish was at 2.5, but I don't think he's racing this weekend. Ben Rhodes is next on the list. He's got a driver rating at 116.3. That covers two races, and his best average finish is at a 5.0. So we'll keep that in mind as well. The last driver who has a driver rating over 100, Andy, is Zane Smith. And I don't think Zane's on the entry list for this weekend either. So that is kind of a mute point with his driver rating. But just so you know, his driver rating in two races is 113.6. Now, there are some drivers on this list, though, that have really good average finishes, even though their driver rating is not that great. And I've got three of them that have a decent average finish there. William Sawalich is one of them, a 9.0 driver rating. Ty Majeski, your pick, Andy, is another one. His driver rating is at 7.5. And I don't think Johnny Sutter's in this race, but his driver rating, just as an FYI, is at 2.0. So even though they have a box score that's lower than 100, they have pretty good average finishes at the Strat. Any thoughts on that information, Andy?
Yeah, those are all good drivers that you'd expect to be in contention this weekend. I think that there's no reason to think that they won't have a chance to win this weekend. Guys that come to mind, like Corey Heim and Christian Eckes, Lane Riggs, Ty Majeski, they're all pretty good at these types of racetracks. And it seems like, in particular, Corey Heim and Eckes this year have been really good everywhere that they've gone. So one would have to expect that they will once again be in contention to win on Friday night.
Your fantasy preview for the Craftsman Truck Series. They are going to be racing the Long John Silver's 200 out at Martinsville Speedway Friday night. That's tomorrow night, April the 5th, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, with Fox Sports 1 carrying the pre-race coverage starting at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. And there'll be radio coverage available at MRN and Sirius XM NASCAR Radio. They'll race 200 laps to cover a distance of 105.2 miles. First two stages are 50 laps, with stage one, of course, ending on lap 50, stage two on lap 100, and the final stage will be 100 laps, ending on lap 200 for the Craftsman Truck Series. What's our first headline here for the Truck Series, Andy?
Well, first off, I just have to say that I'm really excited for Martinsville this weekend. It's actually my all-time favorite racetrack on the NASCAR circuit. It's awesome that all three series are in action. So very much looking forward to that. Should be a fun one. Specifically talking about the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series, five action-packed races lead to a record start in the Craftsman Truck Series. The first five races of this season here in 2024 have passed the eye test, producing intense side-by-side action-packed competition, and the stars are in it to back it up. This season is just the fourth time since the inception of the Truck Series, that, of course, back in 1995, that the series has started the season with five different race winners and five different pole winners, something I actually didn't know until just now. That's interesting. Through the first five events of a season, joining the 1996, 2005, and the 2012 seasons, of course, the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series 2024 season has seen 23 different drivers lead laps, producing an average of eight different lap leaders per race, and that's tied with 2005 for the second most average lap leaders through the first five races in series history, behind only the 2022 season, and that, of course, with 8.4 lap leaders per race. Christian Eckes, of course, driver of the number 19 Chevrolet for McAnally-Hilgerman Racing, has led the most laps this season, as I alluded to just a few moments ago, having a strong start to the year. He's led 173 laps, and the first five races have also generated an average of 16.2 lead changes per race, which is a series record for the most average lead changes through the first five races in series history to start a season. So that's incredibly impressive. The previous record, of course, from that 2022 season, 15.2. So quite a start to the year, Sharon, and a lot of parity for what's been a great start to the 2024 truck season.
It's been, and I love seeing that competitiveness in the truck series. They're highly competitive there. And the stats kind of back it up that this has been a really competitive season, and a lot of racing action as well on the track. So next we're going to talk about the night racing at the Paperclip, because this is a Friday night race that's taking place for the Craftsman Truck Series on Friday night, starting at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. And there have been 46 Craftsman Truck Series races at Martinsville. It's one of the longest standing tracks in the NASCAR agenda. And they produced 33 different winners and 30 different pole winners. Nine races have actually been won from the pole or that first starting position. Most recently, Chase Elliott did that back in 2017. So we'll take a look at the drivers who have etched their name at that half-mile track into the record books. and there's quite a few here. Some of them are pretty long-standing. Jimmy Hensley has the race record that was set back in 1999 at 74.282 miles per hour. Qualifying record, Joey Logano, that was more recent, set in 2015 at 97.088 miles per hour. The most poles, Jack Sprague has that record, and Johnny Sauter holds the record for the most wins, and both of them are at four in both of those categories. The most top fives, Matt Crafton and Johnny Sauter, are tied at that for that record at 11. The most top tens, Matt Crafton excels. He has 23 top tens. And, of course, laps led, it's none other than Kyle Busch at 627. And laps completed, Matt Crafton, the veteran of the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series, has 8,736 laps led for that record. So, again, they're going to have the three stages for the Long John Silver's 200 at Martinsville. And then practice will begin Friday at 3:05 Eastern on Fox Sports 1 and Sirius XM NASCAR Radio, followed by the Kometic Gasket Pole Qualifying that will start at 3:40 p.m. So a lot to look forward to coming up here on Friday night.
Absolutely. And as I already mentioned, I'm certainly really excited for that. Looking ahead here to a hot streak, 10 different winners in the last 10 races at Martinsville for the Truck Series. Of course, Martinsville Speedway continues to uphold its race winner streak with 10 different winners in the last 10 races at this historic track. The streak is currently second to the Bristol Motor Speedway. From August of 2014 through March of this year, for the longest active streak in the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series of different winners. The different winners streak began in 2017 when Chase Elliott took the checkered flag in the spring race, followed by Noah Gregson in the fall, John Hunter Nemechek in 2018 spring, followed by Johnny Sauter in the fall race of that year. The following year in 2019 showed Kyle Busch with the spring win with Todd Gilliland in the fall. Grant Enfinger and Zane won the lone race there in 2020. Zane Smith, the lone race there in 2021. William Byron winning in 2022, and then most recently, Corey Heim won there last year. There's only two previous winners who are entered in Friday night's 200-lap event, and let's take a look at how they fared overall at Martinsville, the first of which is Grant Enfinger. The veteran from Alabama has yet to crack the top five this season with his new team, but has two top 10 finishes under his belt. Driving, of course, the number 9 Chevrolet for CR7 Motorsports, has made 11 starts at Martinsville and posted a win, as we've already mentioned, back in 2020 with five top 10s. And in addition, he's led 56 laps at the half-mile short track in Virginia. Corey Heim, the most recent winner, of course, at Martinsville, is on course for another breakout year. And in two starts, the driver of the number 11 Toyota for Tricon Garage has posted a win, and that was last year in 2023, with one top five and one top 10. The Georgia native has also led 82 laps in his short time at Martinsville in the Truck Series. And, of course, as the series returns there this weekend, all eyes will be on those two to see if they'll make another trip possibly to Victory Lane.
Hey, and both of those drivers were picked by our Fan for Racing crew, so that's pretty cool. Okay, we've talked a little bit already about Cam Waters, the supercar star, making his debut at Martinsville this week, I should say. He's a 11-time supercar winner. Cam Waters departed Australia, bound for the USA to make his Truck Series debut at Martinsville, piloting again that number 66 ThorSport Racing Ford. He hails from Mildura, Victoria, Australia, and he started nearly 250 supercar races throughout his career. He's been the champion runner-up twice and has three podiums in the series, the Crown Jewel event, the Bathurst 1000. Now, Waters has had a long-time ambition to race in the States. We heard him talk about that on his interview a little bit earlier. He's following in the footsteps of Shane Van Gisbergen and Brody Kostecki. The 29-year-old will become the third Supercars driver who has ventured to NASCAR in the past year. Waters has also been a longtime NASCAR fan, so he understands that racing can be quite aggressive at times, and he addressed that in his interview as well. So if you haven't heard his interview yet, I encourage you to go back and listen to that. It's at the top, it's at the 30-minute mark, or they're about the 30-minute mark. You can hear Cam Waters' interview that took place earlier this week. So there's a few milestones coming up too, Andy.
Yes, there is indeed, and we'll take a look at those here coming up for this weekend. Of course, the first of which is Matt Crafton, expected to make his 550th career NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series start. That's hard to believe. Crafton leads the Truck Series in all starts, all of which are consecutive. Crafton leads the series in starts and consecutive starts. Tanner Gray is expected to make his 100th career NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series start this weekend. Bailey Currie will make his 50th career start this weekend in the Truck Series. Christian Eke is also, like Tanner Gray, slated to make his 100th career start. Actually, that's coming up at Darlington Raceway. Some of these milestones are upcoming. The ones we've mentioned so far are pertaining to starts this weekend at Martinsville Speedway. But some upcoming ones, additionally, Christian Eke will make his 100th career start at Darlington. Ty Majeski will make his 75th career start at Darlington. And also Corey Heim is set to make his 50th career start. That will also be upcoming at Darlington.
And so these drivers, they've worked really hard to get here. And the fact that they're hitting these milestones are a really big deal. So if you can want to reach out and congratulate them on making those milestones, the three this week and then the three for next weekend as well at Darlington Raceway. So congratulations to all of them. Next up, we're going to get into the NASCAR Xfinity Series. Let me go back here to my notes for the Xfinity Series and the box scores. Andy, well, you may not have it. I was going to have you give our pick so far in the Xfinity Series, but you may not have that down on paper, right?
No, I'm afraid I do not have the box scores.
Okay. Well, let me give you the picks from our Fan for Racing crew. This week, Owen Stewart started us off, and he chose Justin Allgaier. I had the second pick. I took Cole Custer. Tommy took Austin Hill. Mike took Eric Almirola. Brian Eberle went with Chandler Smith. Andy, who did you go with? Do you remember?
I had to think about this one, Sharon, because of the fact that I picked fairly late in the game. And so this one took me a moment to come up with an adequate pick, but I went with A.J. Allmendinger, of course, a veteran of the sport, who is really good at road racing, and there are some road racing tendencies that come into play at Martinsville as far as saving your tires and your brakes, being easy under braking so that you can get the car to rotate and get up off the corner, maintaining rear grip. So road racers have generally succeeded at Martinsville. And of course, with AJ's experience, not just as a road racer, but also his Cup and Xfinity experience over the years as a veteran, I felt like he'd be a pretty good pick. I know he hasn't had the start to the season that he may have liked, but perhaps this weekend we'll give him an opportunity to contend for his first win of the season.
All right. Jay went with Sammy Smith, and then Randy took Jesse Love, the rookie. So I thought those were some really good picks. I was just checking the entry list real quick here because I know that the guy who's at the top of the list, I don't believe it is on the top two guys, are not on the entry list, I believe, for the Xfinity Series this weekend. But they do have the best box scores, so I will mention them. Ty Gibbs has the top box score for Martinsville at 138.7. That covers two races. And John Hunter Nemechek comes in second at 122.5. Their average finishes are pretty good. Ty Gibbs at 2.2 and John Hunter Nemechek at 4.3. But Sammy Smith is on the entry list this weekend, and he comes in next with a box score at 119.7. His average finish at the track, though, comes in at 7.7, so that's pretty good. Cole Custer, the guy that I took, his average finish isn't that great. It's at 11.0, but his box score is over 100 at 109.4. So we'll see what he does this weekend out at Martinsville. Brandon Jones, I believe he is on the list. There's quite a few that have a box score over 100. He's one of them. His box score is 103. His average finish, though, is at 11.3. So what that tells me, and that covers four races, by the way, what that tells me is that he has some really good races at the track, and he has some really not so good races at the track. So same thing with Cole Custer. A.J. Allmendinger's on this list, Andy, and his box score comes in at 101.3 with an average finish at 9.5. So that's a pretty good stat for Justin A.J. Allmendinger. Justin Allgaier is right behind him with an average finish at 10.3 and a box score at exactly 100. So a pretty good stat there for him. Ryan Truex, though, I'm going to kind of point him out. I don't know if he's on the entry list this weekend or not. I'm going to scan that real quick.
He is not entered this weekend.
Okay, he does have a pretty good average finish, though, at 9.5. So I wanted to go ahead and mention that, even though that covers four races. That covers two races. So even though his box score is below that 100 mark, he does have 10 or better average finish at that track. So hopefully that helps you. Now, when Brian's here, he always gives us the DraftKings odds. So he's not here, though. So we'll skip that for this week. Some good stats there for the Xfinity Series. All right. Let's go ahead and give you the details for the race. Xfinity Series will be racing the Dude Wipes 250 at Martinsville this Saturday, April the 6th, starting at 7:30 p.m., another night race for the Xfinity Series. It will be televised on Fox Sports 1, starting with pre-race coverage at 7 p.m. and radio coverage on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. They'll race 250 laps to cover a distance of 131.5 miles, 60 laps in the first stage, ends on lap 60, another 60 laps in stage 2 will end on lap 120, and then the final stage has 130 laps, ending on lap 250. So the field is set, Andy, for the Xfinity Series for the Dash 4 Cash. This will be the first race of that.
Yeah, it certainly is set for this weekend. Of course, Richmond Raceway last weekend was the race that set that up for the qualifier for the first round of the Dash for Cash here in 2024. And we'll begin this weekend with the Dude Wipes 250 at Martinsville. And, of course, going for that big bonus of $100,000, those drivers eligible are Chandler Smith, Eric Almirola, Jesse Love, and Parker Kligerman, who are the four highest-finishing regulars from Richmond. That get to compete for that bonus this weekend. And let's take a look at how the competition has performed at the half-mile track. Of course, Chandler Smith driving the number 81 Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing has made two starts at Martinsville, posting a top-10 finish. His teammate is Eric Almirola. He'll be in the number 20 Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing, making, believe it or not, his NASCAR Xfinity Series debut at Martinsville this weekend. Kind of hard to believe that a veteran of the sport would be making his Xfinity debut this weekend. But nonetheless, Almirola will have to lean on his experience from his 30 NASCAR Cup Series starts that he's made at the track, in which he posted 9 top 10 finishes to help him navigate this weekend. Of course, Richard Childress Racing's rookie, Jesse Love, in the number 2 Chevrolet, will be making his series track debut this weekend at Martinsville. And Big Machine Racing's Parker Kligerman in the number 48 Chevrolet has made two starts in the Xfinity Series at Martinsville, posting a top 10. And, of course, for more information on the NASCAR Xfinity Series Dash for Cash program, you can go to NASCAR.com and look for more information on that.
All right. I love the Dash for Cash program. It really puts a spotlight on the series regulars in the Xfinity Series, and it gives them a chance to really go after some extra bonus money there as well. So it's kind of watching the race within the race, if you will, with that Dash for Cash program, Andy.
Yeah, you know, it really highlights the series regulars, you know, and helps promote them. Of course, we don't have the influx of Cup drivers like we did in the past, but to give a financial incentive to go to the Xfinity Series regulars, I think is awesome. So certainly a worthwhile program.
Definitely, definitely. I love it. All right. Chandler Smith is one of the drivers that have multiple wins now. Again, he races with Joe Gibbs Racing. He got his first Xfinity Series win last season at Richmond Raceway and then managed to go back to victory lane again last weekend for the Toyota Care 250. That put him at the driver's standings lead by 10 points over the second-place driver, Austin Hill. Now, his victory at Richmond was Smith's second victory of this season, though. The first came at Phoenix Raceway just a few weeks ago when the 21-year-old driver had a standout season, posting a top-five finish in all but one race so far. So his only finish outside the top 10 was at the Circuit of the Americas when he finished in eighth, which still is not a bad finish for that track. Smith will look to keep his early momentum going as he heads into the paperclip of short tracks this weekend at Martinsville. He hails from Georgia and has only made two starts at Martinsville previously. That track is a 0.526-mile track, and he posted a 10th-place finish in his debut last year. And in last year's fall race, he fell victim to an incident and ultimately ended up finishing the race in 36th place. I don't expect that to happen maybe for Chandler Smith this weekend. He's had a really good start to the season, so I think we might see a better finish for him this weekend out at Martinsville.
Chandler Smith has been so impressive this year. Of course, personally for me, I like to follow Cole Custer, but Chandler Smith is somebody that I've had my eye on that's really having a breakout year, and I felt that he probably would. Obviously, getting a year of experience under his belt with colleague racing was beneficial, and he had a good season last year, but returning home to Toyota and getting back within the TRD fold and also signing with Joe Gibbs Racing for the NASCAR Xfinity Series, paired with a veteran crew chief like Jeff Mendering, I really felt like this could potentially be a breakout season. He's already proved that with two wins already. This is the kind of year in which he could win 8 to 10 races and contend for a championship. So certainly Chandler Smith is really somebody that has a lot of talent, is having that success to back that up, and really poised for a good year. And I look at Martinsville, another track where Joe Gibbs Racing has had a lot of success, as a place where he could possibly contend for that third win of the year, Sharon. So certainly someone I think you have to keep your eye on, not just at short track, but really everywhere that the series goes. So certainly somebody that's really just getting the job done right now. Speaking of Martinsville, of course, on that subject, it is, of course, the paperclip of short track. And staying with that groove, the NASCAR Xfinity Series drivers will now be making their way to Martinsville for the aforementioned Dude Wipes 250 on Saturday, April 6th. That's, of course, at 7:30 p.m. That'll be on Fox Sports 1 for this weekend. Martinsville Speedway has hosted 41 NASCAR Xfinity Series races. That goes back to 1982, producing 27 race winners and 22 different pole winners. Seems that it's difficult to win at Martinsville from the pole position, as that feat's only been accomplished 6 times. The last time, of course, all the way back in 1987 by Jimmy Hensley. A few drivers hold records at the half-mile track. The most wins, of course, Sam Ard, one of the great veterans and most successful drivers of the Xfinity Series. He has 5 wins. The most top fives goes to Dale Jarrett with 11. Most top tens, that's Jimmy Hensley and Tommy Houston with 17. For lead lap finishes, that would be Jimmy Hensley with 14. laps led Tommy Ellis at 7:13. And, of course, the race record is Sam Ard, 79.07 miles an hour, and that was back in September of 1982. Qualifying record was not too long ago, that, of course, by Ty Gibbs, at a speed of 95.985 miles an hour. That was back in April of 2022. The NASCAR Xfinity Series drivers kick off their weekend with practice. That'll be on tomorrow evening at 5:05 p.m., followed by qualifying shortly thereafter. And both of those sessions will be on Fox Sports 1.
There's a battle brewing over at Junior Motorsports between teammates, and there's a couple of drivers that are still looking for their first win of the season. But the organization is optimistic about this weekend at Martinsville because there are only two drivers entered in the Dude Wipes 250 that have conquered the paper trip, the paperclip track. And that includes teammates Justin Allgaier and Brandon Jones. Jones, who pilots the number 7 Chevrolet for Junior Motorsports, has made 7 starts at Martinsville. He has 1 win there in 2022, 3 top 5s, 5 top 10s, and he's led 142 laps. Allgaier, on the other hand, will be in the number 7 Chevrolet for Junior Motorsports. He has 7 starts under his belt with 1 win there just last year. He's got 4 top 5s, 6 top 10s, and 33 laps led. The competition is going to heat up this weekend for both of those drivers as they're both looking to post their first win this season and break the different winners streak at the track, which is currently at 13 drivers. So we'll see if either one of them can make that happen this weekend out at Martinsville.
Okay, speaking of streaks, of course, we always like to look at the different statistics as far as that goes. And for Martinsville Speedway, it's had 13 different winners in as many races. The different streak in the NASCAR Xfinity Series at Martinsville Speedway that is alive and well and has reached a staggering 13 different winners dating back all the way to 1992. The current streak started with Bobby Labonte's win in 1992 and followed up by some familiar names from NASCAR in the past. Ward Burton in 1993, Chuck Bown in 93, Terry Labonte in 94, Kenny Wallace in 1994. Those of you may remember there was a long break in which the Xfinity Series did not race at the Martinsville Speedway. That came back briefly, and that was in 2006. Kevin Harvick won that race, and then the series took another 14-year hiatus in which returned in 2020, in which Harrison Burton would win that race. Two races took place there in 2021, and those were won by Josh Berry and Noah Gregson. Brandon Jones would win in 2022, as well as Ty Gibbs in the fall event. And the lone race there was in 2023 with John Hunter Nemechek and Justin Allgaier here 2024. Allgaier and Jones are the only former Martinsville winners this weekend that could snap that streak.
Yeah. People there, unless they've got a crystal ball. But yeah. Since,
that's what I was thinking. I was like, man, do they know something we don't know? But I believe they're referencing the fall race there of 2023. I'd have to go back and look for sure. I think they ran 2 races there last year. But if not, and Justin Allgaier wins this weekend, you can say you heard it here first, right? So we'll see what happens.
And there you go. There you go. Okay, we were wondering about Ryan Truex. He's going to return to the Xfinity Series at Texas Motor Speedway with Joe Gibbs Racing for his 3rd Xfinity Series start of the season. He's going to pilot that number 20 Toyota for the first of 3 straight races, including Talladega Super Speedway and Dover Motor Speedway. So he's made 2 other starts with the team this season. His first was the season opener at Daytona. He finished 21st in that race. And his second race was at Atlanta Motor Speedway, and he had a 9th place finish there. So Truex earned his first Xfinity Series career win at Dover Motor Speedway just last season. So that was cool to see. And I can't wait to see him back on track at Texas Motor Speedway. So, Andy, we've got some things coming up here for the for the Cup Series as well.
Well, we do indeed. Just real quickly to touch on Ryan Truex, obviously excited to see him back running a limited schedule. I like what he's doing running a partial schedule for Joe Gibbs Racing. I think that gives him the best chance to be competitive when he does run his races. And as we all know, he's capable of winning Dover last year. I would expect to see him contend for possibly some more wins this year too. So definitely excited to have him back part-time in the NASCAR Xfinity Series for this season. As you mentioned, moving on to the NASCAR Cup Series.
But before we go, wait. Before we go there, I want to make sure I give you the box scores for the Cup Series.
Oh, yes, of course.
Oh, so let's go ahead and do that. There's four drivers that have a box score over 100, starting with Ryan Blaney. He's at the top of the list at 109.9. His average finish is one of the better average finishes at the track as well at 7.5. Denny Hamlin comes in second with a box score at 105.6. His average finish, though, is 10.3. Kyle Larson is next up, and he's actually tied with Chase Briscoe, which is kind of interesting. They both have box scores. Well, Larson is at 102.7, while Briscoe is at 102.4. Average finishes are exactly the same at 7.0. So Chase Briscoe may be an underdog for this weekend in the Cup Series. We'll have to see what happens there. Looking at another driver that you want to consider, though, even though his driver rating is below 100, he does have an average finish at the track at 4.0, and that's Joey Logano. So he's going to be one to watch. And another driver with a average finish at the track that is below 10.0 is his average finish is at 9.3, and that's Ross Chastain. So he might be an underdog for this weekend as well. So some drivers to keep your eye on this weekend. As I look at the picks that we have here in the Tampa Racing Fantasy game, Jay took Ryan Blaney off the table with the very first pick. He's gone. William Byron is who Mike Ozell took. Tommy Gibbs is putting his bet on Ty Gibbs this weekend, and I took Martin Truex Jr., so we'll see what happens there. Brian Eberle took Kyle Larson. Owen Stewart took Alex Bowman. Andy, you took a good driver.
Yeah, and Jay pointed this out, too. He couldn't believe that Denny Hamlin made it all the way to me. Of course, fresh off that win at Richmond last weekend, Joe Gibbs Racing, always really good at Martinsville. Denny Hamlin, always really good at Martinsville. And I might as well go with the hot hand, somebody that has visited Victory Lane recently. And I felt like he would probably give me the best chance to earn some points this weekend.
Got really lucky with a good pick there at the end. Randy, in case you guys don't know who Randy is, Randy is the nickname that we've given to our random pick for the series. And so Randy always gets to go last. And the pick for Randy is a pretty good pick, too. He's got Logano this weekend. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So
it,
there you have
some... Honestly, Logano is a good pick. He's coming off of a strong run last weekend. I think that I don't know what the point situation is like, but I think we've all, done a pretty good job at picking some good drivers this year. So should be a fun battle as the season progresses. If you don't mind, we'll talk about the specifics of this race. Of course, it's the NASCAR Cup Series Cookout 400. That'll be at Martinsville Speedway this Sunday, April 7th at 3 p.m. The purse for this one is a whopping $7,669,028. The $28, I think, is probably the deal breaker there. The coverage will start on Fox Sports 1. That'll be at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, of course, on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. The distance is 210.4 miles. That'll be 400 laps. Stage 1 will end on lap 80. Stage 2 will end on lap 180. And the final stage, of course, ends on lap 400, or if there's an overtime finish. We'll see what happens there. Looking forward to that one, Sharon.
I'm like you. I'm looking forward to the whole weekend. I think it's going to be a fun weekend. All right. Speaking of Denny Hamlin, though, he's a Virginia native. He leads a high-performing Joe Gibbs Racing to Martinsville this weekend, fresh off his second win of the season last weekend at Richmond Raceway. The Chesterfield, Virginia native, Denny Hamlin, holds a very high-performing Joe Gibbs Racing organization and leads them to Martinsville this weekend. Two of the four Joe Gibbs Racing drivers have won already this season. That would be Christopher Bell, who won at Phoenix, and Denny Hamlin at Bristol, as well as Richmond. All four of the JGR drivers are inside the top six in the Cup Series point standings, with Martin Truex Jr. holding the standings lead, followed by Hamlin in third, Ty Gibbs is in fourth, and Bell settles in at sixth place. The only four-car team operation with all four drivers inside the top 10 of the series point standings. Also, through seven races this season, those four drivers are tied for the most top five finishes. Three of them are Joe Gibbs Racing drivers, Bell, Gibbs, and Truex. The only other driver with five top fives this season is Chris Buescher over at RFK Racing. So through seven races of the season, there are five drivers that have led 100 laps or more. Four of them are from Joe Gibbs Racing. That would include Truex at 352 laps led, Hamlin at 292, Gibbs at 195, and Bell at 119. The fifth driver is from Hendrick Motorsports, and that would be Kyle Larson, who has the most laps led of the season at 368. Joe Gibbs has racked up 14 Cup Series victories at Martinsville. That's the third most all-time behind Hendrick Motorsports. They have 28 wins, and Petty Enterprises comes in at 19. Now, Christopher Bell is the most recent JGR driver to win at Martinsville, with his victory in the 2022 playoff race. Hamlin leads all active drivers this weekend with wins at Martinsville. He has five victories coming in 2008, 9, 10, and he swept there in 2015. So we'll see what he does this weekend. I got a feeling, and that's why I picked him. I think Martin Truex Jr. is going to be looking for some redemption this weekend.
Yeah, and Truex is always a good pick. He's always fast and always competitive. That 19 car in recent years has always been somebody that you have to contend with to win Martinsville, and I'm sure he's fired up after Richmond last weekend. So, yeah, you get it said. He'll be in contention to go out there and try to get the job done for what would be his first win of the season. Taking a look at some other topics here, of course, Hendrick Motorsports celebrates the organization's 40th anniversary at Martinsville. Founded by NASCAR Hall of Famer owner Rick Hendrick in 1984, Hendrick Motorsports is the winningest team in NASCAR Cup Series history with an all-time record of 304 points-paying victories and 14 championships. The organization holds almost every major statistical record at NASCAR's top level, including pole positions, top 10 finishes, top fives, and laps led. To quote Rick Hendrick himself, he said, "When I think back on our story, I have a hard time believing it myself. In 1984, we had five employees, 5,000 square foot of rented space, and a lot of desire to make it work. I dreamed of one day winning a race, but I never imagined it would grow into what it is now. Every bit of success we've had is due to the contributions of our people and the incredible support we've received over 40 years. And we're here because of the commitment, the passion, and the sacrifices made by so many. It's been an incredible ride, and we're just getting started." To end his quote. In the eighth race of the 1984 season at Martinsville Speedway, it was driver Jeff Bodine who recorded Hendrick Motorsports' first career Cup Series win, which kept owner Hendrick from shutting down the fledgling team. To celebrate the 40th anniversary of that key victory, this week Hendrick Motorsports will run four ruby red paint schemes in the Cookout 400. Of course, as we mentioned, that's this Sunday for the eighth race of the 2024 season. Kyle Larson will drive, of course, the number 5 HendrickCars.com Chevrolet, Chase Elliott's number 9 UniFirst Chevrolet, William Byron's number 24 Exalta Chevrolet, and Alex Bowman's number 48 Ally Chevrolet. If you haven't seen those paint schemes, they're really nice-looking race cars, and they should look really nice on the track this weekend. I'm looking forward to it. In addition, the celebration will also include Rick Hendricks serving as the honorary pace car driver for the Cup race, and Jeff Bodine and nine-time Martinsville Speedway winner Jeff Gordon as the event's grand marshals. Hendrick Motorsports has fielded only Chevrolet race cars in the Cup Series since it was established and has 28 Cup-level victories among nine different drivers at Martinsville. That's a pretty big stat, one that I did not know until just now. Jeff Gordon has nine of those wins. Jimmy Johnson also with nine. Darrell Waltrip with four. Jeff Bodine with one. Dale Earnhardt Jr. with one. Chase Elliott with one. Alex Bowman with one. William Byron with one. And, of course, Kyle Larson with one, which is the all-time record for a team with wins at a single racetrack. So certainly Hendricks had a ton of success there. I think we all know not only their history at that racetrack, but also we can't ignore the tragic events that took place there in the early 2000s. Regarding Hendrick Motorsports. So certainly a really special and meaningful racetrack and place for them. And I'm sure they'll look to go out there and try to win this weekend. It would be very meaningful for a lot of different reasons, Sharon.
Yes, indeed. You certainly hit the nail on the head with all of that. That's so true. But here's something I didn't know. It's been a decade since a driver has won from the pole at Martinsville. Despite being considered the most proficient starting position in the NASCAR Cup Series field at Martinsville, a driver has not won from the pole or the first starting spot in over a decade. The last competitor to accomplish that feat was NASCAR Hall of Famer Jimmy Johnson, and he did it in April of 2013. The pole or first starting spot has accounted for 21 wins, or 14.38%. at Martinsville Speedway in the Cup Series. That's a total of 16 different drivers who have won a Cup race from the pole at Martinsville, led by Jimmy Johnson, who has done it three times in 2008, 12, and again in 2013. So Joe Gibbs Racing's Denny Hamlin is the only active driver who has previously won a race at Martinsville from the pole. He did it back in 2010. In total, 63 drivers have won from the pole at Martinsville Speedway in the Cup Series. This weekend, seven of the 63 drivers are entered into the Cookout 400. They include Joey Logano. He has five poles at the track, dating from 2015 sweep, again in 16, 17, and 19. Denny Hamlin in 2007, 10, 13, and 19. Martin Truex, Kyle Busch, they both have two. For Truex, it was in 16 and last year, and then for Busch in 2014 as well as 2018. Ryan Preece, Chase Elliott, and Kyle Larson all have one. Kyle Larson's came in 22, as did Chase Elliott's. Ryan Preece got his pole in last season. So all of the NASCAR Cup Series track action will begin with practice at 4:35 p.m. Eastern, followed by the Busch Light pole qualifying at 5:20 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, April the 6th. Both events will be broadcast on Fox Sports 1, as well as the radio coverage on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. Are you there?
Okay.
Okay.
Yes, let's see. Just want to see our next topic, of course. Perfectors of the paperclip to pay attention to. In the NASCAR Cup Series, a total of 59 different drivers have won at Martinsville Speedway. And this weekend, 11 of the 59 different Cup winners will be active, led by Joe Gibbs Racing's Denny Hamlin with five victories. And that's from 2008, 2009, a 2010 sweep, and taking a look at active Martinsville winners. Denny Hamlin has five, those aforementioned dates of 2015, 2 in 2010, 2009, and 2008. Martin Truex Jr., like you mentioned, Sharon, definitely going to be a factor this weekend. He's got three wins at the track, and those are fairly recently, too, in 2021, 2020, and 2019. Brad Keselowski with two victories in 2019 and 2017. Kyle Busch also with two wins in 2017 and 2016. Ryan Blaney took a win last year along with Kyle Larson. Those were the two winners there in 2023, and the two winners there in 2022 were Christopher Bell and William Byron. In 2021, Alex Bowman took a victory And Chase Elliott won there back in 2020. Joey Logano won there in 2018. NASCAR Hall of Famer Richard Petty leads the NASCAR Cup Series and wins at Martinsville Speedway with a whopping 15 victories. And those victories were in 1960, 1962, 1963, a sweep in 1967, 1968, 1969 sweep, 1970, 1971, a 1972 sweep, 1973, 1975, and 1979. Tied with North Wilkesboro, in which he also won 15 wins, for the most wins by a driver at a single track in the series. Hendrick Motorsports' Kyle Larson, of course, the defending winner of the Martinsville Spring Race, and Team Penske's Ryan Blaney is the most recent winner. That was back in the fall.
Stroll back here, but can you imagine Andy winning your first NASCAR Cup Series trophy and it being a grandfather clock? It's one of the best ones.
That trophy in all of racing, you know. And I know some may want to, you know, disagree or suggest another trophy. One can't argue the Daytona 500 winning trophy or perhaps an Indianapolis 500 trophy, but I think winning a grandfather clock is no pun intended, the granddaddy of them all, if you will. So, you know, certainly it's an impressive trophy. It's one that the drivers all seem to enjoy, and I think it would be a really cool trophy to have.
I think drivers dream of winning that trophy. And, you know, there's 35.1% of the field that are looking for their first career win in the Cup Series. That's 13 of the 37 drivers that are entered this weekend. That's a feat that hasn't been accomplished since Ricky Craven earned his first career win at Martinsville more than 20 years ago. So can it happen this weekend? We'll have to wait and see. The Baker's dozen of drivers looking for their first win this weekend at Martinsville include Josh Berry, Harrison Burton, Ty Gibbs, Todd Gilliland, Noah Gregson, Kaz Grala, Daniel Hemric, Carson Hocevar, Corey LaJoie, John Hunter Nemechek, Ryan Preece, Zane Smith, and Josh Williams, all looking for their first win this weekend. In total, there have actually been 12 drivers who have won their first career Cup Series win at Martinsville. Dating back to 1950, it was Herb Thomas who did that in the fall of 1950, Dick Rathman in the spring of 52, then it was Jim Pascal in the fall of 53, Jack Smith in the fall of 1956, Bob Wellborn in the fall of 1957, one of my all-time favorite drivers, Fred Lorenzen from Elmhurst, Illinois, did it back in the spring of 1961. Earl Ross in the fall of 74. Then Dave Marcisse did it in the fall of 75. Morgan Shepherd got his first win in the spring of 81. Harry Gant in the spring of 82. Jeff Bodine in the spring of 84. And Ricky Craven was the last one to do it. That was in the fall of 2001. Amazing. Looking to this weekend at Martinsville, of the aspiring 13 drivers that are looking for that first Cup win, seven are former Xfinity or NASCAR Truck Series winners at Martinsville. The NASCAR Xfinity Series Martinsville winners include John Hunter Nemechek in 23, Ty Gibbs did it in 22, Noah Gregson in 21, Josh Berry also in 21, then it was Harrison Burton in 2020. In the Craftsman Truck Series, those winners include Zane Smith, who won there in 21, Todd Gilliland in 19, John Hunter Nemechek in 18, and Noah Gregson in 2017. It's amazing. That's an amazing stat that we haven't seen a first-time winner since 2001. Of the drivers that are racing this weekend, the Baker's Dozen, who do you think has the best chance of maybe doing it? I suspect I know your answer, but go ahead and tell us.
Yeah, I'm sure you do, because to me, it's Ty Gibbs. It has to be. Just having a really good start to the 2024 season, I feel like he's on the verge of that first career win. He runs well at Martinsville. He's won there in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. I have to think that Cup Haas success, as well as the success of Joe Gibbs Racing, he'll be a factor. He has to be certainly up there in the top five battling. And if you can, you know, put yourself in position, I don't see any reason to think that he won't be a factor this weekend.
Okay. Well, Josh Berry would like to have something to say about that. He says, I think it should be another good opportunity for us to build on the success that we've had on short tracks this year, said Josh Berry about this weekend's venue. Martinsville has been a good place for me in the past. I feel like if we can continue to carry the momentum that we've had at some of the other short tracks this year, there's no reason we can't go and contend for a win. But I figured you were going to pick Ty Gibbs. I think that would be everybody's first pick out of that group. But I don't discount the fact that Josh Berry is a good short track racer. So we'll see what happens this weekend.
And that is a valid point because, you know, I know it's been a tough start to the year, and we've all documented Stuart Haas Racing's struggles. However, Berry ran pretty well at Richmond last weekend. He's a short track ace. That's his background. That's his bread and butter, if you will. No reason to think that they won't be good this weekend. And in fact, looking back to last year, one of Stuart Haas Racing's best racetracks as far as speed for all of their race cars was Martinsville. So if they can translate some of that success to this weekend, you know, Berry should have a good day. You know, I have to wait and see, you know, if he's got the potential to win, but, you know, certainly there's no reason to think that they won't have a good day this weekend. I think that it could be, you know, just the type of racetrack to help get their season headed in the right direction. So we'll see, but certainly, you know, someone you have to keep your eye on.
Let's look at the other end of that spectrum. Yeah, the other end of the spectrum is the guy who's got the most wins.
Denny Hamlin, yeah, of course. You know, looking for his third win this season on a track less than a mile in length. Since the 1997 NASCAR Cup Series season has run six races each season on tracks that measure less than a mile in length, and those are two races at each track. Richmond, of course, a three-quarter mile oval. Bristol is a half-mile oval, and, of course, Martinsville, also a half-mile oval. The only season since 1997 to not have six total races on tracks less than a mile was the 2020 season, and that was, of course, due to the COVID restrictions in which the series only ran five races on a track less than 1 mile that season. This year, Hamlin has won the first two of the six races on tracks less than a mile, and will be looking for his third this weekend. And since 1997, the most wins by a driver on tracks measuring less than a mile in a single season is four. That was by NASCAR Hall of Famer Jimmy Johnson back in 2007. Three other drivers have been able to win three of the six races measuring less than a mile in a single season since 1997, and that was Denny Hamlin in 2010, Kyle Busch in 2009 and 2018, and Martin Truex Jr. in 2019.
It would be a big Denny Hamlin to go after that victory again this weekend. We'll see if he's able to do that and celebrate if that happens. All right, let's take a look at the milestones that are coming up. I don't think this weekend the Cup Series will be at Martinsville Speedway. There's a few possible milestones that can be achieved this Sunday and over the next few weeks. I don't see any for this weekend. Oh, maybe it's further down. Okay, let's look at the starts milestones that are coming up. I don't think there's any at Martinsville this weekend, but let's start with William Byron at Texas Motor Speedway. He'll make his 225th start. John Hunter Nemechek at the same track will make his 50th start. At Talladega, there's just one driver hitting a milestone, and that's Michael McDowell. His 475th Cup Series start will happen at Talladega. And then at Dover, we have a couple of drivers. Alex Bowman is set to make his 300th Cup Series start there. And at 50, it's Noah Gregson hitting that milestone at Dover Motor Speedway. At Darlington, just one driver, Ross Chastain, will make his 200th Cup Series start. That's kind of hard to believe, but true. And then Chase Elliott and Corey LaJoie are hitting milestones out at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Chase Elliott will hit his 300th Cup Series start, while Corey LaJoie will be hitting the 250th mark for the Cup Series starts at Charlotte Motor Speedway. For wins, Denny Hamlin right now sits at 53 Cup Series wins. If he wins another race, he's going to tie NASCAR Hall of Famer Lee Petty for 12th on the all-time list with 54 victories apiece. Martin Truex is sitting at 34 Cup Series wins. If he were to win another race, he's going to tie Brad Keselowski for that 24th spot on the all-time wins list with 35 victories apiece. Joey Logano has 30 series wins. If he were to win another race, he's going to tie NASCAR Hall of Famer Fireball Roberts for 27th on that all-time wins list at 33 each. Kyle Larson sits at 24 Cup Series win, and if he wins another race, he's going to tie Jim Pascal and Joe Weatherly for 34th on the all-time wins list at 25 victories apiece. So pretty cool to see all of these drivers have a chance to hit some pretty cool milestones along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. It sure is. It's always interesting to see, you know, what they're able to accomplish over time. And some of these milestones get away from you, too. It's hard to believe that, you know, some of these drivers have made the number of starts that they have. One final segment here as we wrap up the regular portion of our show is the Sunoco rookie update. Josh Berry takes the rookie standing lead following Richmond. Stewart Haas Racing's Josh Berry has jumped to the 2024 NASCAR Cup Series Sunoco Rookie of the Year standings lead by 9 points over Spire Motorsports' Carson Osovar in second with his season's best finish. That was 11th place at Richmond last weekend. Prior to Richmond, Osovar held the rookie points lead following four races, longest streak this season after Las Vegas, Phoenix, Bristol, and Circuit of the Americas. Looking to this weekend, Berry is a former NASCAR Xfinity Series winner at Martinsville Speedway, but will be making his NASCAR Cup Series debut at Martinsville this weekend. His closest competitor, Josevar, made his series debut at Martinsville last season. Carson Josevar actually was quoted to say, "We've had some bad luck in my past races at Martinsville, so I feel hopeful about this weekend to put that behind me. I feel confident in myself, and the team feels confident in our program. And we can just keep building our notebook." And, of course, rounding out the rookie standings is Rick Ware Racing's Kaz Grala, currently ranked third in the Sunoco rookie standings, at 30 points back from the lead. And Osovar's Spire Motorsports teammate Zane Smith, who ranked fourth in rookie points, 36 markers behind Berry.
So always cool to see how the rookies are faring up against each other throughout the season. And I kind of suspected we might see some changes in that ending, and in fact that has happened. So we'll see what happens for the rest of the season, because I suspect there could be some more changes that happen at the top of that list. But, Andy, we are the only ones that are here for our Hot Topic Sound Off segment. I'm going to just double check that and make sure nobody else is sitting in the wings over here, and there are not. I feel very fortunate that we were able to get this show in today because the first notification I saw coming into the studio today was that BTR was having some issues with the broadcast system, the live broadcast system. So hopefully we have done this for, it seems that everything's gone well so far. So we hope that streak continues here. All right. Do you want to move over here to Hot Topics, Andy, and pick out our first Hot Topic to address today?
Absolutely. First off, Sharon, I have to say that's impeccable timing. We're done right at 1 o'clock in time for Hot Topics. That's what the professionals do, right? So, but, no, obviously, yeah, excited for Hot Topics, of course. This is what I do most of the time. And, Sharon, let's start off with Joey Gase, fined for a safety violation. Of course, he threw his bumper cover at another competitor at Richmond in the Xfinity Series race last weekend.
Yeah, that was a surprise to me. You know, I've been down in Texas. I've had some family things going on with my son introducing his second book, and we've been super, super busy with some behind-the-scenes things, trying to get his book off to a good start. So I haven't seen races at COTA, nor did I see the races this past weekend at Richmond. So I didn't see any of this. But when I heard that Joey Gase had thrown a bumper at another competitor, I was kind of really surprised, like mild-mannered Joey Gase. But I guess everybody has their moment. He was actually fined $5,000 for a safety violation after he threw a rear bumper at a competitor's car Saturday at Richmond. So NASCAR announced that penalty, saying that the driver of the number 35, Joey Gase Motorsports Chevrolet, was penalized for violating sections 8.8.K of the NASCAR rulebook, which states a safety violation may be imposed for any action or omission by a competitor or vehicle that creates an unsafe environment or poses a threat to the safety of competitors as determined by NASCAR. So, yeah, the thing here is that he definitely did not follow the NASCAR protocol, which is once you get out of your car after an incident, you are supposed to go directly to the safety vehicle. Joey definitely did not do that. He got out of his car, tore the bumper off of his car, and then threw it at Dawson Cram, who is the competitor that he had a tangle with over in turn one on lap 173 of the event. So the big deal here is that you cannot put safety on the back burner when it comes to NASCAR racing. Even if it's under a caution, I think that these guys need to really be aware of the safety concern of walking up toward the track, traveling around the track. Now, I understand it was under a caution, but he walked up toward the track and then threw that bumper toward Dawson Cram's car. We're lucky it landed. He threw it pretty well. It landed on top of the car and didn't go through a window or anything or hurt anyone. But the potential for an injury was certainly there with that action. So I think NASCAR did the right thing and gave him the penalty. So what are your thoughts? Do you think that was the appropriate penalty for a first-time offense?
Yeah, I think, $5,000 for the penalty on that. Obviously, I think they had to administer some kind of penalty. I love the emotion, though. I mean, you look at, you know, highlight reels from years past of drivers, you know, flipping somebody off or throwing a helmet. You know, fans love that emotion and love that. So from that standpoint, I was entertained. I have yet to see the race, so I'm looking forward to going back and watching that. But, yeah, you probably shouldn't be throwing parts of your race car at other competitors, and I think NASCAR has to set an example and administer that fine so that other people don't get the idea of making that a habit. But I love the emotion. I really do, and I don't blame Joey for feeling the way that he did. He felt like he was wronged by another competitor, and he displayed, you know, his displeasure with that particular driver. So, you know, like I said, kind of a double-edged sword for me, I guess. I love the emotion, and I love what he did, but, you know, I also understand that you can't really be throwing stuff at other cars. So I also can understand the penalty, and I think it was the right decision.
Yeah, I agree with you, Andy. We love the emotion when we see it from the drivers. We want our drivers to be human beings. And of course, everybody does have their moment. But when you put others at being hurt, NASCAR is doing the right thing by imposing a penalty. I think Joey Gase is well-liked among the fan base, and I think he's certainly going to be forgiven, especially with this being a first offense. So I don't see any harm there. The safety has to be the top priority. But emotion, sometimes the emotions do get the best of you. So I think we all understand that. Any follow-up from you, Andy?
No real follow up. I think that I think that the precedent was set, to competitors to not throw car parts at other people. But, I hope that that drivers can continue to show that emotion, and I think something to be said too, to add to the story, Joey Gase owns that car. He's a team owner. So probably a lot of his frustration comes from, that's equipment that he pays for and works hard to maintain. So I can understand the frustration. And I look forward to seeing that type of emotion from other drivers, but just have to go about it a little bit differently is all.
Yes, and I should also note here, that's a really good point, Andy, that you bring up there, that Joey owns that car. And so it certainly plays into his frustration for sure. But I want to make sure that we also mention Jay made a comment on our team's thread about this. And his comment is that this was a given stepping out on a hot track. But I like that they clearly state it is about the safety aspect, not about his expression of frustration. So, yeah, I think NASCAR made it very clear that it was the penalty was all about the safety side of it. And I think NASCAR likes seeing the drivers being able to vent their emotions as well. They just don't want to do it in a way that's unsafe. So that's all I have left to say. So let's go to the next one, which is Junior Motorsports still has an interest in the Cup Series. So what are your thoughts about Junior Motorsports? Do you think they'll do that at some point? Jay brings up it always seems to come up when they're talking about SHR downsizing or withdrawing. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, and that's a good point. And that's actually going to be a separate topic that we have yet to cover that Jay posted on Tuesday. So I'll address the Stuart Haas Racing selling charters or downsizing in a different hot topic that we'll get to, specifically about JR Motorsports. I really would love to see them in the Cup Series. I think that Dale Jr. Is excellent for the sport. I love his knowledge about the history of the sport. He's actively involved in many different aspects. We see him a lot, whether it's in social media content, most recently, of course, in broadcasting with NBC. Hopefully we'll continue to see him do that in the future. So he's a very passionate owner. He loves NASCAR. I don't think anyone loves NASCAR more than Dale Earnhardt Jr. I think that because of that passion and that commitment to the sport, he's an excellent owner. Obviously has had a lot of success with his Xfinity Series teams over the years, and I think he'd be a tremendous asset if he expanded that operation to the Cup Series. I'm all for it. I would love to see them do this. And, I've made some candid comments about, Stuart Haas Racing. And, I've openly said maybe just sell it to Junior. Let him take it over, because I think that he'd really be good. He'd be good for that team, and he'd be good for having a presence in the Cup Series. And like I said, I'll talk specifically about SHR in a few minutes, but absolutely hope that this comes to fruition. I'd really like to see JR Motorsports make that jump, and I think it would be an excellent move.
Indeed. They've been talking about it for a while, and I think a lot of people would like to see Junior Motorsports in the Cup Series, and they've been trying. It's not for a lack of trying that they're not there yet. I think, and this could be a whole nother topic in and of itself, the charter system has been a little bit of a sticking point, if you will, for Junior Motorsports coming into the Cup Series. So now that they are talking about the future of SHR, there may be some opportunities. We'll see what the potential is for team owners to buy a charter if, in fact, something happens there, and we will get more into detail with that in a bit. But they're not the only driver. According to Adam Stern from the Sports Business Journal, Junior Motorsports is one of four teams that are interested in moving up into the Cup Series. So talking about the charter system, that could be quite quite an ordeal if there are four teams that are competing for those charters if they do become available. And we've seen some creativity. I like some of the creativity we've seen with Trackhouse Racing. They just flat out bought out Chip Ganassi Racing and took over those charters. I'm just wondering if we won't see something like that happening here as well. What any other thoughts that you have about it, Andy?
Yes, I mean, in you know, something you touched on there is the charters themselves and what they're worth, and if there's a demand and there's a lot of competition for any charter, there's going to be a huge price tag on that. So I think that's the hang up, I think, in many cases, is what's the return on that investment going to be for anyone purchasing a charter? Is it financially worth it? Is it not worth it? You know, and I think those are the things that have to be looked at before anyone makes a decision to buy. And certainly the higher the demand, the higher the price. And I think that's, you know, potentially a sticking point for some of these owners that may want to expand or perhaps get into the Cup Series but can't buy the cost of a charter right now. So, you know, I can't put an exact price tag on it. I've heard upwards of $20 million. That's a lot of money to break. You know, that's a lot of money to break into the Cup Series. So, you know, you have to decide if it's worth it or not. But, you know, but I like I said, you know, I certainly hope that Junior Motorsports makes that jump. I think that Junior's presence as a Cup owner would be very welcomed and a very good thing. I can't help but admire, you know, what he means to the sport, you know, and, you know, I think that a hands-on owner like him would be very good for the Cup Series.
Yeah, too. I think it would be awesome and really good. I would hate to see them leaving, though, the Xfinity Series, because they're so competitive in the Xfinity Series. I think they're going to leave a big hole if they do decide to leave. It would be cool if they were able to do both the Cup and the Xfinity Series, but time's going to have to tell the rest of that story, I guess.
Yeah, Sharon, real quick, you know, to speak to that point, you know, obviously they've got four full-time and a fifth part-time car in the Xfinity Series. I mean, that could be a matter of, you know, maybe they scale back to two or three cars, you know, maybe they run a couple Cup cars. I mean, that's all speculation. No one knows for sure because nothing's been announced, but, you know, it is possible that they could somehow continue in both series because, like you said, they've brought a lot to the Xfinity Series over the years and certainly would love to see them remain a part of that series. And I think they would, and my reasoning for saying that is, you know, Junior loves the Xfinity Series. He loves competing in that series. I would find it a bit hard to believe that they would pull out altogether. But nonetheless, I hope that they can be a part of both series moving forward. I think that they would, you know, do well in both.
Yeah, Andy. Since we've already kind of approached this topic, let's go ahead and go to the next topic, which is a lot of smoke around it. The SHR selling team or charters, maybe downsizing. So do you think it's a possibility that Stewart Haas Racing will downsize this year?
Yes, I do, Sharon, and I'll explain why. You know, Stewart Haas, to give a little bit of backstory, Stewart Haas Racing, of course, purchased the assets of the old Haas CNC Racing back, which is owned by Gene Haas, that began back in, I think, 2002, 2003, right around there. When Tony Stewart bought into the team, it was a two-car operation in 2009. 2009 through 2013, I believe they only ran two full-time Cup teams, so, and they had success. I mean, Tony Stewart won a lot of races and won a championship as a two-car team. Ryan Newman won races in the team's second car during that time frame. So being a two-car team isn't necessarily a bad thing. 2014 was when the team rapidly expanded. They added not just Kevin Harvick that year, but they also added Kurt Busch in addition you know, to Tony's car, as well as I think it was Newman's car at the time. So, I think it might have been Danica Patrick by that point. I don't quite remember the driver rosters over the years, but they did expand to four cars in 2014, and they've been a four-car team since then. Well, you know, from 2014 through 2020, I think they sustained that success. They won races. They ran well, and they succeeded as a four-car team. But that success really ended at the conclusion of 2020. From 2021 until now, they haven't really been all that competitive. I hate to say that. They've had their flashes of, you know, solid runs here and there. But to me, there's been a noticeable decline in performance since 2021. And sometimes, you know, maybe you have to take a step back and you have to perhaps downsize to get, you know, to kind of just take a timeout, take a reset, and, you know, get back to basics, get back to, you know, figuring out what it takes to be competitive. And maybe that means you cut back to, you know, maybe a couple full-time cars that you can put all of your resources into that can help you get better. I'm going to use an example from the past, Richard Childress Racing. And this goes back, Sharon, to when Jeff Burton raced there. They expanded to it was four cars back in the 2009 season, and that was a rough year. The team struggled mightily, and so they cut back to three cars for 2010, and they ran a lot better. All three cars ran really well that year, and Burton, I remember saying at the time, this isn't directly quoted, but I remember him saying that he felt resources were spread thin, and that's why the team struggled with four full-time entries. And so I think we can probably take that mindset and correlate it to Stuart Haas Racing, you know, and think that, you know, I can't help but think that perhaps if they were to scale back to two full-time cars, or even three cars for that matter, that maybe they could pool more resources into those teams and they can be more competitive. But I do think it's time that they hit the reset button, because something over there is just not quite working, I think, the way that they're accustomed to. And this is a team that is accustomed to winning races and contending for championships. But, you know, this is now the fourth consecutive season in which, you know, they've struggled. There's no other way to put that. So I do think that, you know, perhaps downsizing and focusing efforts on a couple, three cars would be good, but also selling might not be out of the realm of possibility either. And I say that because Tony Stewart, you know, has his hand in a lot of different things, and that's not a bad thing per se. But, you know, I think, you know, with his drag racing and other stuff he's got going on, like Eldora Speedway, you know, he's not there all the time, you know, and neither is Gene Haas for that matter. He's got a Formula One team that he has to focus on. So I'm not implying anything bad for either of those owners, and I'm not implying that they're absent from the racetrack, but I just think it might be time for a fresh perspective and a fresh look at things from perhaps the ownership side of it. And that's where somebody like a Dale Earnhardt Jr. Could come in, you know, perhaps buy and rebrand the team as JR Motorsports, you know, bringing in a good hands-on, fresh perspective that could really spark some new energy and new life into the team. So either downsizing, I think, is a possibility, a strong possibility. And also wishful thinking on my part is, you know, maybe Dale Jr. comes in and buys the team or buys a couple of the charters and you know, or takes over the team altogether. It's hard to say, you know, this is all just kind of me thinking right now, but I do think that it's time for something to change over there, whether that's downsizing or whether that's selling it outright. You know, something's got to change, because right now with four cars, you know, entered each week and all of them struggling to some degree, that can't be sustained forever. Something will have to change at some point.
Yeah, you bring up some interesting speculation there, Andy, and I think it's something that actually people started speculating all the way back to last year when Kevin Harvick and Eric Almirola retired or left Stuart Haas Racing. And they brought in Josh Berry and Noah Gregson. Those are former junior motorsports drivers. And so I think a lot of the speculation started then when they signed both of those drivers to drive for this season, that there was a possibility that maybe SHR and junior motorsports were working together toward a transition for Stuart Haas Racing. And, it certainly looks that way. It's hard to say. But there's also been some other speculation that's been out there and rumors that have been on the table, and that's that Stuart Haas might be leaving Ford this year so maybe switching back to Chevrolet or with a new manufacturer that might come in. And right now that speculation is all around Honda. So who knows what's going to happen? But I think if you look at what has already happened, there are certainly indications that Junior Motorsports could take over maybe the cars for Josh Berry and Noah Gregson at Stuart Haas Racing and leave Stuart Haas with two other cars that they run for, who is it, Chase Briscoe and Ryan Preece. So we'll see what happens, but I like some of what you were talking about there, giving some examples going back to RCR when they cut back from four cars back to three, and your statement about what Jeff Burton said about resources being thin for all four cars, that those are all very viable reasons for why it might make sense for Stuart Haas Racing to downsize at the minimum. And if he were to sell out all four charters, that would be huge because, as we mentioned in the earlier Hot Top, there appear to be, according to people who are in the know, there appear to be four teams that are looking to make a move into the Cup Series for the future. So if all four cars were to go up on the selling block, that might allow for more teams to maybe make that move into the Cup Series. Again, a lot of speculation on the table, a lot of people looking at what's already happened and filling in the rest. We'll have to wait and see if that's what actually happens because there's all kinds of possibilities, all kinds of things that could change the dynamics as they stand right now. But it is going to be interesting to see how that continues to play out. The cost of these charters could be a whole different topic that we could discuss, but I think it is holding back teams from being able to move into the Cup Series when you're talking about charters in the $20 million range. That's just outrageous in my way of thinking. I'm just a person on the sidelines here trying to figure out what's going to happen. And that's all we're doing here now is trying to anticipate what might happen. Anything else that you want to add in there?
Yeah, I think that, four charters being up for sale would be monumental in terms of the Cup Series landscape changing. And that's why, maybe – yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. It's tough to even speculate on it because you just don't know what direction it's going to go. But I would agree that change is in the air regarding Stuart Haas Racing, whether it's downsizing or selling or changing manufacturers. There's a lot going on there right now. And of course, the team hasn't said anything in terms of what its future will be. But there's been a lot of speculation. And in my experience over the years, when there's smoke, there's fire, no pun intended to Tony Stewart. But, I feel like when there's a lot of chatter and there's a lot of speculation and there's a lot of rumors, I feel like there's something to that, and I think that something has to change. I mean, something has to change. There's no doubt about that. I think that four cars struggling on a weekly basis can't go on forever. So whatever changes occur down the road, it remains to be seen. But I think something has to change there. Interesting correlation that you made to Junior Motorsports is the fact that Noah Gregson and Josh Berry now drive for Stuart Haas Racing. So maybe there is something more to that we don't know. But, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. Obviously, as a Chase Briscoe fan, I have a pretty vested interest in how they do, and it's been a struggle. It's been frustrating the last 3 years or so. So I am one of the people that really wants to see something happen or change there that brings their level of performance up. You know, you want to see them get better. You want to see them succeed. You want to see them do well. You know, so I'm certainly on team improvement, whatever that may be, whether it's selling or downsizing, whatever the case is, I just want to see them succeed and do well. So hopefully they can figure that out moving forward.
Yeah, share that, because we both like Chase Briscoe and have been following him for a long time in his racing career. And so I agree with you. I think there is a vested interest when you have drivers that you like that are driving in an organization and going through the things that Stewart Haas Racing is going through. You really want to see things work out for the best for everybody. So we'll see how it plays out. And hopefully everybody will be happy when all is said and done. We'll have to see what the picture looks like when that happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Hoping for the best, you know, but it'll certainly be a topic that we'll probably revisit again as the season progresses.
Absolutely. I'm kind of surprised we skipped over this one at the beginning of the show, but let's go ahead and hit this topic now, because at Richmond, there was a lot of conversation, and like I say, I did not see the race, so I couldn't really comment in the early going about that final restart at Richmond between Denny Hamlin and Martin Truex Jr. But now I've seen some more evidence, if you will, and I'm kind of curious about what your thoughts are about it. I will just briefly, I don't know if I can do it briefly or not. Maybe I'll save that. But I know Mike Orzel and Jay Huseman had some comments in our team thread. But what are your thoughts, Andy?
Actually, I was just looking to see. I thought perhaps you guys may have covered this on Monday. Did you not?
We did. We did cover it on Monday, but now they've come out and made some admissions.
Oh,
so
I see what you mean.
What happened,
yeah, gotcha.
Yeah. So NASCAR admitted
that
they blew the call, so.
Gotcha. Yeah, certainly I'll admit firsthand I haven't seen the race yet, and I haven't seen the final restart, so it's hard for me to have much of an opinion about it. However, I'm going to give NASCAR a lot of credit for coming out after the fact and admitting that there was a mistake. You know, obviously a lot of people, whether it's people within the industry or fans alike, noticed that Hamlin jumped the restart. I certainly am curious to see that restart to formulate my own opinion of it. But obviously there's a lot of evidence to suggest that he did jump the restart. But things happen, and obviously drivers are always looking for a competitive advantage on any start or restart to try to, you know, get the best possible track position, or in Hamlin's case, retain the lead and subsequently win the race. So that gamesmanship is just, it's always going to be there. Drivers are always going to be finding whatever advantage they can. And in Hamlin's case, he went a little bit early, and ultimately that sealed him the win. I can see the frustration from other drivers, you know, with Hamlin winning that race because, you know, the restart wasn't legitimate. But specifically for NASCAR's admission, like I said, I give them a lot of credit because, let's be honest, these are humans making these decisions. And it's inevitable that something's going to get slipped through the cracks here and there. I think generally speaking, they get it right. Generally speaking, they do a pretty good job at officiating and usually are really good about administering a penalty when it's due. And this is just one of those rare instances where it slipped through the cracks. I don't think that there was any ill intent or any race manipulation or anything like that. We're humans, right? And I think that if we all tried to run a race, I, for one, would struggle. People would make fun of me profusely if I tried to be a race director. So I can't really judge anything that they do. I think that, it's hard for me to really judge what they do. I think generally speaking, they get it right. And every now and then there's going to be a slip up and, you know, they'll learn from it and move on. And you know, I'm sure they'll work to be better in that officiating moving forward.
Yeah, you bring up a good point, Andy, and that was something that I kind of wanted to talk about because You know, a lot of times the fans say, and we were just saying about Joey Gase, we liked the fact that he showed his emotion and we saw a human side to who the driver is. And so what we have on display here is the human side of NASCAR. And NASCAR is not perfect, nor should we expect them to be perfect at all times, because it is run by people. And we have all made our own mistakes in life. And it's, like you said, it's almost inevitable that we're going to see somebody make a mistake at NASCAR. Now, originally, Elton Sawyer came out and said that they felt like they had reviewed it. They let it go. And that was, I think he thought, maybe the end of it, but that they were going to look further into it. So they did look further into it, and in fact, even though I did not see the race, I did catch a video with Steve Letarte and Todd Gordon going frame by frame, if you will, over the restart, and it was, they made it very clear to me that Denny Hamlin jumped the restart. Not only did they look at it frame by frame, but they also made note of when Hamlin stepped on the throttle. And it was clear that he stepped on the throttle and made his move well before that restart zone line. So that convinced me that he did jump the restart. Now, Hamlin also admitted on his Actions Detrimental podcast that he knew he went early, and that he was trying to protect the competitive advantage that his pit crew gave him with the final pit stop before that final restart. And so I'm going to say a phrase that you've heard me use before, and I've heard other people use the same phrase. Sometimes NASCAR has to save drivers from themselves, because as you mentioned, Andy, drivers are going to do everything they can to get every competitive advantage that they can get. They all admit that. They all know that they're at fault for it in some cases. And this is just another example of that. Hamlin felt like he needed to protect the advantage that his team gave him on pit road. So he stepped on the gas a little bit early, and he got by with it. Unfortunately, he got by with it. A lot of people are not happy about that. I understand that frustration as well. But I know that drivers are highly competitive and that those kind of things are going to happen. But here's the thing. Gamesmanship on the restarts has been happening for a while now. There were a lot of things going on. You had Joey Logano kind of hanging back a little bit, and I think there was another driver. I can't think of who that is right offhand. But there were a couple of drivers kind of hanging back a little bit. That's one of the gamesmanship things that they do, so that when the leader crosses that line to get into the restart zone, they can get a good running start to kind of get some momentum to get past that leader. That's gamesmanship that they do on a regular basis. I don't envy NASCAR being in this position where they have to make these kind of stick and ball calls. I don't think NASCAR wants to be in this position. But I will tell you that 99.9% of the rules that are put into place are put into place for incidences like this, where a driver has pushed that envelope just a little bit too far. And I think that's what is happening here. NASCAR looked at it again. They realized that they let something go by. And I had asked the question even when it happened, why couldn't they use the telemetry? They used the telemetry for other situations. Why didn't they use the telemetry here? Again, we're talking about human beings, the end of the race, and human beings do what human beings do sometimes. So I think we can acknowledge that. I think we can forgive that in some cases and move on. The main thing here that I think fans want to know is, not only do you acknowledge that you made the mistake, which NASCAR has done, What did you learn from that mistake so that that doesn't happen again? Because from some of the comments that I've seen, people feel like stuff like this has happened in other races. So NASCAR now has been put into that box where they have to make that call. And so you can't complain now if NASCAR makes the call and your driver loses the race because they jumped the box on that restart. So you can bet your bottom dollar that NASCAR is going to be watching this very closely from this point. And I'll go back to some things that I said in the past when drivers have been caught with illegal parts on their car or shenanigans, whatever you want to call it, happening with their car. I don't want to see a champion crowned at the end of the year who has been caught doing illegal things, whether it be with car, with the race itself, in this situation with Hamlin, or whatever. And that NASCAR has the unenviable position of being in the position of having to make those calls when people do these kind of things. So, yeah, they dropped the ball here, but I think that they will go back and use telemetry in these kind of situations. And sometimes we might not know who the winner of the race is until they've had a chance to go back and review it. So this is the moment I want everybody to remember when those things happen. NASCAR needs the time to be able to go back and look at that. I'm going to go ahead and read some of the comments here that are on our thread from Jay and from Mike Orzel. Mike posted it, and he said, good on NASCAR for admitting that they blew the call. At least Elton owned up to it. Unfortunately, it resulted in a winner who shouldn't have won the race. What I don't understand or agree with is why can't they go back and change it? They DQ cars for tech well after the race is over. Well after the race is over. They just bumped SVG out of a P2 finish at COTA due to a penalty on the final lap. Maybe on Tuesday, the water is too far under the bridge. This seems like something they should have addressed on Sunday night. If Hamlin jumped the restart, he should be credited with maybe being the last car in the lead lap or something, not just handed a trophy with a shrug and, well, other competitors shouldn't try that next week. Jay Huseman then came in and said, I kind of have to agree there. They went back and fined and took away points after Phoenix with Chastain. I don't like the fact that they said the call may or would have been different mid-race. Mentioned that last night, meaning on our Hot Topics on Monday. The foul or penalty is the same throughout an event. Call it the same throughout the event. You can't speed on the final pit stop of the race just because it's at the end of the race. And those are valid points. I think Mike made some valid points as well. He goes on to say, Mike Orzel, that was another part that bugged me. I don't have a copy of the rule book handy, but my understanding is there are no end of the rule caveats that change the established rules. As Elton pointed out, the leader is the control car, but by the rules, the leader can't fire off until crossing the line into the restart zone. If the leader does go early, as Hamlin did, that's a restart violation that merits a penalty. Now, and I agree with what those guys are saying in our thread here. And I was wondering why NASCAR didn't at the very least, I think they should have taken playoff points away from Denny Hamlin. I understand where they're coming from. They want the fans leaving the track to know who the winner is. But I think they should have at least taken those playoff points away because we know how tight competition can be at the end when they're going for a championship. And I don't think he deserves to get those championship points. Any other thoughts that you wanted to put on there, Andy?
Yeah, not really, but I guess, kind of to cap it off, you know, I think NASCAR admitting, you know, that they had a misstep there, you know, is obviously a really good thing. And I think that rather than take anything away from Hamlin this time around, you know, maybe, you know, maybe they can just use this particular example as a way to get better moving forward. And, you know, maybe they'll be able to analyze and look at replays of restarts sooner, so that perhaps by the time the next lap or two rolls around and the race is over, they'll know if there was a violation or not. And then everyone would know right then and there if Hamlin was in fact the winner or not. So there's probably ways to improve upon, you know, this type of officiating and looking at the replays, and, you know, they'll get better. You know, anytime something like this happens, we all learn from it, you know. And I think that, you know, if they could just find a way to maybe, you know, analyze those restarts maybe a little closer and a little quicker, then they'll be able to, you know, rectify the situation sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I agree with you, Andy. I know this is one of those human error kind of things. And as fans, I think, and fans are also humans. So if we can, if they can admit to the mistake, I think we should be able to let it go and move on from here. But you're right. I think fans will have an easier job of letting it go if it doesn't happen again. So we'll see how it goes. All right. Are there any other topics that we've missed, Andy?
I don't think so. I looked down through our list that we have generated, and it appeared that we're all caught up on everything.
Anything on your mind?
Nothing on my mind. As far as hot topics go, like I mentioned earlier in the show, I'm pretty excited for Martinsville this weekend, and I'm sure coming out of three short track races there, there'll be some things to talk about next week, but no pressing issues that come to mind.
You bring up a good point. Martinsville, somebody always leaves Martinsville with their feelings hurt, and I'm sure this is going to be no exception. So we'll see what happens. But it makes for an entertaining race, no doubt about it, and I'm definitely looking forward to it. So, Andy, thank you so much for being available today. I know we tapped you on the shoulder kind of at the last minute here as far as seeing if you could fill in for Brian. But Brian wanted me to make sure to tell you that he appreciates you being available today as well.
Sorry, I just wanted
to
hit the mute. Yeah, sorry, I was just trying to reach for the mute button. But no, I'm certainly happy to help out. You know, thankfully, my schedule worked out to where I planned to do hot topics today anyway. So, you know, obviously, try to help out when I can. It doesn't always work out, and I know that it's been a couple weeks since the last time I was on, but thankfully today worked out, and thought we had a pretty good show. So yeah, happy to step in today.
Thank you so much, Andy. Well, I guess we're at that point of the radio show that it's time for us to wrap things up and put out our podcast for everyone. So do you want to give them your social media handles and that kind of thing?
Yeah, CB14Fan on X, formerly known as Twitter. And as always, good to be on today. And, you know, obviously looking forward to this weekend. Should be fun, and I'm sure there'll be plenty to talk about come Monday.
Oh, yes, I do believe you are right about that. Again, I just want to remind everybody we played part of the post-media interview from Ford Performance this week with driver Cam Waters with Tickford Racing, and he's part of the Repco Australian Supercar Series. He's going to be making his debut this weekend in the number 66 for Thor Sport Racing in the Martinsville race on Friday night. So we hope everybody will go back and listen to that interview and learn a little something about Cam Waters, and look forward to watching him race this weekend. I'm looking forward to all three races this weekend. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. all of these drivers dream of winning that grandfather's clock at Martinsville Speedway, and so we'll see who has a dream come true this weekend, whether it be to break a record or to win the clock or whatever. Somebody's going to be real happy leaving Martinsville this weekend, so we'll see who that is. I am Fan for Racing Site on Twitter, Fan for Racing Blog and Radio on Facebook, as well as our website at fanforracing.com. I will go out on those social media outlets to let folks know when we finish here, and let the, then we'll release the podcast so everybody can tune in. So we will be back on Monday for a review of the three races at Martinsville Speedway this weekend, and that I'm hoping that will be with Sal Segala and with our Fan for Racing crew for another Hot Topic Sound-Off segment. So I hope everybody enjoys the racing as much as we do, and we'll look forward to talking to everybody on the other side. We'll call that a wrap, Andy.
Okay. Have a great weekend.